array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
That's right here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a civil majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of
be
more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet. Look, you stupid bastard, you've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look! Just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, and stupidity.
I'll do you for that. What? Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
It is again time for the new American Dream Radio Show. The American Russian novel, All We Need Is More Vodka Radio Hour. We have the winds of our own totalitarian society freezing the land solid, the tortured tundra. What we must have is a new American dream, where we're allowed to ask any questions that we have. There are no wrong questions. A new American dream, not of homes and toasters, but of becoming the type of country we always thought we were. A new America, the real hope of the world. Some of those who have spoken the truth are no longer here. Their chairs at the Thanksgiving adult big table are empty. Their relatives have sent them to Siberia with a roll of their eyes. So let us begin. Here we go. Scooch up to the samovar. Maybe leave your hat and boots on. Fill your peasant hand with a warm drink and listen for the sound of hoofbeats on the ice.
I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy. That's not going out right now. We're going to have to fix this, folks. Excuse. What happened here? I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy. Yankee Doodle do or die. A real live nephew of my Uncle Sam, born on the 4th of July. I've got a Yankee Doodle sweetheart. She's my Yankee Doodle joy. A Yankee Doodle came to London just to ride the ponies. I am a Yankee Doodle boy. Well, hello, everyone. I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the new American Dream Radio Show, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And it's a listener-supported station, so be sure to head over to freedomslips.com, subscribe on Patreon, buy some promotional stuff, loot. Hey, it's a great place. They really deserve your support. So, here in the new American dream, we have a dream that it's not of new homes and toasters and microwaves, but of becoming the type of country we always thought we were. And that's what this show is all about. We've been going at it for quite a long time, since February 2011. So here we go. So our country's having a birthday. And, that's that. Anyhow, I am going to bring in now Abba Bird. Abba joins me on the first week of each month, and I believe she's going to have some more thoughts from the family cat, which is a pretty cool thing, a very cool series that she's been doing for us. So we're calling Abba Bird right now. Hello, Abba.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing
all
great.
Right.
It's happy summer.
And to you.
Thank you. How is everything, Chuck?
Well, things are pretty good, you know, for Lorraine and me, and you know, Fort Lauderdale, you know, things started opening up, and then more and more people started getting sick, and now things are closing back down again, or I don't know, it's weird.
You know what, my question is, and I don't know anybody that can answer, but I'll throw it out to you. I didn't think that the flu could really exist in the summer. You know, like where I am, it's about 100 degrees. And I just feel like, you know, how could the flu have these peaks when it's 100 degrees outside, or even 85, 90?
Well, it's not the flu. I mean, it's this other virus.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I just, you know, lots of weirdness around. I just, I guess one day it will be, you know, it will be clear about what all this is about. But it is very, very strange. Just the whole the mask wearing thing is just, you know, when you look back in history, there's never really been anything like this. I mean, wearing a mask in, you know, let's say January is one thing, but, you know, 100 degrees wearing a mask just seems just so, it just doesn't seem healthy or natural at all.
Well,
but
yeah, I don't know.
I mean, in Florida,
it's hot all the time here, so it's not that different now than it was a few months back.
Right, right. But anyway, I just, you know, yeah, like you said, it was all starting to open back up, and you know, and then all of a sudden they clamped it down again. It's just weird in the middle of the summer. You know, the winter's one thing. But the middle of the summer is just strange. The timing of it is bizarre. But anyway, I've got a special guest, and you've heard from this guest the last couple of months, and we came back again. Yep, yep. And the family cat just has a lot more to say. And, you know, we've got a whole lot more after this. So. We'll start with this month. I was going to read, I had a 4th of July special last year. I was going to read that same piece just for the, you know, Independence Day. But I decided that, you know, the cat's message was equally as important. And so I want to get this out there. Anyway, okay. And it's brand new too. Yawn, stretch, meow, scratch and hiss, blink. Don't they know? Don't they know yet? Do they know anything? Don't they know how much I know? Don't they know what I'm thinking? I know what they're thinking. That's why I throw up so many fur balls. I can't help it. It's why I scratch on the antique Victorian couches. It's why I pee on their beds. I shit in their shoes. I'm trying to communicate emergencies. I can't breathe. I can't breathe from these aerosol sprays, from these breezes blowing trails of demon tails in my blue skies. I can't breathe from the environment of sirens and military vehicles screaming by while I sit peacefully inside my Zen perch, meditating on the breath. I can't breathe from the army bases squirting anthrax and death chemicals designed to kill. They teach them how to kill. They poison their own. If they were mine, I would disown them. Pulling in that breath, I sigh deep and stretch. I claw the new lazy asshole chairs. I shit in the dining room to get their attention right before dinner. I'm trying to let them know to quit, call the police and report the gangsters financing wars on both sides and the prankster ruling families, fraternities sucking out late charges, account fees, and overdraft non-protection. Grow at 1%, no interest. Press 0 to speak to an operator. Your call will be recorded. The IRS knows too. Visit Ground Zero to see what they will do. Ask a veteran to see where your tax dollars, see what your tax dollars are capable of. See where it all goes. Get those robots and machine guns here and shoot up the TV sets, fear porning the grandparents, selling drugs to kids, switching genders over dresses, dollhouses, and mascara. Oh, he won't help out in the kitchen, but now he wants to be a woman? He wants to learn about slave wages, mansplaining, and invading personal spaces. He wants to take it over. He declares dominion over all things, even your Tampax. He wants access to your bathrooms, your shelters, your locker rooms. Girls' sports aren't just for girls anymore. He wants access to your baby's bodies to inject industrial toxic waste, neurotoxins, and prickly pricks to make you sicker than Bill Gates. Trans rights are human rights. Really, man? Trans rights are big pharma drama men's rights to his military mindset, pushing buttons to blow up pill pops and hormone shots, dressed up like a freak show, and telling me what to do? Please, bitch, I know who the real pussies are around here. We are the ones who are able to deliver souls into new worlds and can midwife beings into existence through blood, sweat, tears, and shit. She can hold lifetimes inside bodies and birth spirits into material form under conditions of medical murder, mafia, patriarchy, gangsters. She is the life force oxygen. I stand with all pussies. I see the power. I know the power. I am the power. My purrs are on such a high vibration that I can get rid of your pain. I would die from being stuck in a tree before I would ever be caught alive wearing a silly mask. I will not be silenced. I am the original healer, deity, anarchist, and the original freedom fighter. As my purrs have turned to eye rolls, I can't believe I still have to protest this shit. I'm still having to shit in your boots. My meows and stares are ignored, so I use my body language and my special cat powers, my mystical ways. I program thoughts into my slaves until they submit. They become pussy-whipped, as they like to call it. I just call it, I'm a god in Egypt. But because of their stupid religions and insane brains, these humans have gotten way off track. They were smarter a few thousand years ago, when I ruled. I still do, but I have to work for it now. They need to be reminded, and I constantly have to whip them back to shape. They have become very lazy and entitled. I know you might say the same thing about me, but once again, you are wrong. Even though I sit beautifully in the sun for hours and sleep, I am getting things done, planning my way out of this mess. I am sending the ethereal realms messages telepathically, asking for help immediately. Send in the Arcturians. My slaves sit like slobs on a couch and stare into a black, blinding radiation box that spits out the most vile drivel any holy being should never hear. One day it's Russian collusion conspiracy delirium, then it's pizza and hot dogs, then a small dead bug has taken over the whole world. Strangely, it's closing cities and businesses, crashing economies, and altering the laws of all these slave lands. A tick is taking over. It's sucking the blood out of your favorite places to go. It took away my gym membership. It took away my yoga teacher's job. The human virus is infecting the whole planet. Now, you make fun of my in-and-out games. I want to go out. No, I want to stay in. Keep the door open for me so I can just go in and out as I need. Nope, you won't do it. Yep, you'll joke and create memes about my in-and-out, out-and-in desires. I have good reasons, mostly survival. I need desperate escape from the blabbering, blistering, blibbering human voices and their nonstop, nonsensical, stupid blather. And they have their ins and outs, too. It's just known as on and off and up and down. The phone goes up and down, and it bleeps and blips. They look and look, check and check, pick up and put down, glance and obsess, grab and grab, password after password to access BS after BS, swipe and smile, just like me. We do have some things in common. I swipe and smile, too. Swipe, smile, purr. Excuse me. Hello? Oh, yes. Hello, Lyrans. Hello, Lemurians. Yes, Pleiadians. I am here sitting in the window, looking out, just waiting for you to beam me up and get me out of here. All right. There we go.
I think we all share that last sentiment. that was great, Ava. Thank you so much. I love this series.
You're welcome. Great.
All right. So, everything good out there?
Everything's great. I mean, other than this whole mask wearing thing that, you know.
Oh, yeah, I know.
The cats and me and, you know, we're all really just, you know, don't like it. You know, I don't like being muffled and silenced, and especially at 100 degrees out, you know. So,
yeah,
I mean, right. I see the symbolic nature of it. I do feel like I think it's a preparation for the vaccine state. Like, this is step one, you know, just forcing these things upon you.
Could
and
be.
Then the next step will be this, where, you know, they're wearing us down, you know, getting us to comply. I mean, it's so that's been on my mind, but
yeah. Well, yeah, back in back when I was growing up, the polio vaccine was the big thing. Yeah. Everybody trooped out and got it.
Right, yeah. And, you know, that ended up causing a lot of problems for people. The vaccine really had a lot of problems.
Yeah.
But.
And, of course, there were.
Anyway.
Yeah, anyway. All right. Thank you so much. This was, I always look forward to having you on the show.
All me right. too, and I always look forward to it too, and I look forward to next month, and I really enjoy the show too. When I hang up, I tune in and listen to the show, and I really love it. You do a great job, Chuck.
Oh, great.
And all your guests
great.
Are great.
Thank you. All right. Well, I'm going to pull in Frank Cordero's recording now, so talk to you soon.
Okay. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Okay. All right, listeners. Our next guest is Frank Cordero. Frank and I visited earlier, and I'm going to play that recording back for us right now. So here we go.
Hello, Chuck.
Hey, Frank, how are you?
Well, I'm just kind of laying down in my room. It's really hot and muggy here, and we're in like the first of five straight days, you know, over 90. Nothing new for you folks in Florida, but in Iowa, this is it can be repressive. And so I'm trying to take it easy and waiting for your call.
Aww.
And thinking about what to talk about this week. We've had, we've had some young people come and go. The younger folks that are involved in our community are very much involved in the Black Lives Matter here in Des Moines. I'm really proud that they're doing it. They're primarily doing medical stuff with people who help people get their eyes and their breath and their lives together after they've been tear gassed. Bail. They've been doing bail for everybody getting arrested and finding money, big money. I shouldn't have found that kind of money.
Frank,
so what they did was, yes, go ahead.
Have you ever been tear gassed?
You know, I have not been tear gassed. I haven't. How about you?
No, I haven't. Amazingly enough, my mom and my uncle were tear gassed in front of the White House in one of the Vietnam War demonstrations.
Wow. You know, they outlawed as a chemical, a war chemical, a crime to use in wars. It's just,
that's okay. We can use it for crowd control.
Yeah. The upside of this is that one of them took down our practice nonviolence banner that I have on Berrigan House, and they repainted the back of it. Which says defund the police, and put it up. And I'm going like, you know, I'm slow. This is slow. I'm thinking like, you know, nonviolence, practice nonviolence is going to be around even after you defund the police. And the defund the police is, what does that mean? And then on the other hand, I'm thinking like, shut up, old man. This is a moment in which serious people and masses of people are taking on the longstanding racism in this country. And it's endemic, and it's in the police force for sure. Defunding the police may not make a lot of sense, let's say, you know, 2 years ago, when I've heard it before, too. It's not the first time. But now, with everyone embracing it, and what they're saying is, what I hear them saying is, we don't want the police we have now.
Right.
And we want, right. We need more than that, who. Yeah, we need more than police, the security they're given. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, the idea of police, if they're really there to help people, help them find the services they need, protect them from. I mean, because there are a few people we might need protecting from once in a while.
We can't be that flippant about that. There's a lot of people out there, and they have this thing called guns.
And exactly.
If I were in the police,
it's kind of nice to have somebody between us and the guns. Yeah, that.
Yeah, I mean, and the gun is a gun culture. It's all part of this whole. Really
yes.
Fucked up a country that we're living in right now.
Yeah.
And this is a moment where light is being shined. You can feel consciousness, heads clicking, people catching on. Just whole sea change politically. I mean, I hope I'm not wrong, but I don't see how Trump can come out of this. He's a hate baiter. He thrives on this sort of stuff, and he's like. He accelerates the movement, and more and more Americans, unless I'm reading the tea leaves and the talking heads and the people I'm listening to, there are people who are seriously dealing with this issue of elected people, city elected, county elected people who are seriously dealing with this issue in their cities and their county boards and making votes New York takes a billion out of its police department and they can hide the money, whatever. It just shows you that their people are, there's pressure and they've got to show something. Clearly they'll show less than we need. That's always the case. Hopefully the momentum will continue. And that neighborhoods and communities really get back their police, and then you can't do that without also confronting the security state we have, and again the guns and let's go after the military too. See, this is the sham. They keep shuffling this stuff around, and then nobody wants to do our military any wrong. You know, they're the best guys in the world. Blah blah blah.
Huh. Yeah,
but since 9/11, everything we've been involved in pretty much has exposed us for the war crimes and war criminals we are
exactly.
In the dominant empire.
Exactly.
And who fights these things but our military? So, yeah. You know, and I learned this. I learned the military gets a buy in this country. That's how they sold the whole idea. That's how things changed in Iowa in the last 30 years. The building up the military, the National Guard now is a key part of the federal U.S. troops and military.
Right.
And they've sold up the whole communities, all these communities, the bill sells that are American, whereas our soldiers are the best guys in the world. And in my generation, the last 15 years, all of the wars we've been involved in are terrible. Even Trump.
Yeah.
I mean, even
yeah.
Trump will say, these are the worst of dumb wars. I mean, like, hello?
Yeah.
And yet, the people who fight them are never held accountable. Now, I'm not talking
right.
about seeking out soldiers to
right.
make them criminal
right. I think
and
you're
go
talking
to jail.
About the people that make the decisions.
Well,
yeah.
I am talking about everybody in the system. And
okay,
we ought
yeah.
to hold everybody accountable. The problem is, in the moral world, and that's really where I've invested a great deal of my life, the moral issue having to do with killing.
Yeah.
This mantra that is pro-rich, pro-war, pro-USA, has been embraced by all of the major denominations in this country.
Oh, God, tell me about it.
And so, I mean, to ask soldiers to do the morally right thing when the moral leaders of their community pat them on the back and say thank you for your patriotic work and
yeah.
never address these things,
yeah.
that's where the problem
right.
is. At least that's where I see the problem.
I think that's certainly a huge part of the problem, Frank, really.
But the defund the police, it's a timely thing, and it's got a lot of cred because a lot of people have put their lives on the line for that concept.
Right.
It may not sound make any sense, but the more this movement continues to reflect where it's going in addressing the systematic racism, that gives them more money.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human beings!
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right. You tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
All right, thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Welcome back, everyone, to the New American Dream Radio Show, right here on Revolution Radio at FreedomSlips.com. And this second half hour, as those of you who follow me every week know, features Philip Peruggio with his show, It's the Empire, Stupid. And we're going to add him into the show right about now. Phil also does a number of interviews and
on time.
Hey, there's Philip. Welcome.
There's the man of the hour.
American Dream.
Are we ready?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. We got July 4th coming up, but let's think back. Here's something I wrote the other day. The sin just continues. You know, nations commit sins just as individuals do. Sometimes there is a marriage between individuals and nations that sin is one. This is the case of my dear country, the place of my birth, and actually the only country I ever lived in. Being a baby boomer, that is a lot of decades to sample the sins of empire, and there are many. There's no need for me to go any further back than a bit over 100 years ago, when those who ran this empire propagandized us into World War I. This was a European war between competing imperialist countries. For what? The right to hold on to the colonial empires they all ran? So our sinners here at home pushed our sea of working sips into believing that the Hun was evil and that the Brits, French, and Russians et al. Were victims of that Austria-Hungary, German, and Ottoman aggression. Does anyone remember that Edward Bernays, future father of advertising, honed his skills during World War I by being part of our country's Committee of Public Information? Does anyone realize that Nazi propaganda minister Joseph Goebbels use Edward Bernays' ideas as the guide for his directives? Now, during World War II, the Soviet Union lost over 25 million of its people, with about half of those killed, 13-plus million, being military personnel. We lost 295,000 military personnel, the British 452,000, the French a quarter of a million, and China 3.5 million. Germany and Japan together lost over 4.9 million. So who took the brunt of the horror? Yet, not even a year after World War II ended, the sin of my country was the creation of a Cold War against the USSR. If Henry Wallace had not been stopped by his own party, the Democrats, from succeeding FDR, the whole ball of wax may have not have transpired. Instead, thanks to those same evil ones who ran this empire then and still do, what Eisenhower warned us of in his 1961 farewell address, the military-industrial complex grew as bitter fruit. Needed funds for a secure safety net for our citizens was diverted into the rabbit hole of increased militarization. Baby boomers should well remember fallout shelters and duck and cover air raid drills in elementary and secondary schools. The necessary fear card was continually played throughout the 50s and 60s. You know, as Mick Jagger stated so eloquently in the Rolling Stones hit song, Sympathy for the Devil, I shouted out, who killed the Kennedys when after all it was you and me? Another sin of empire was committed each time great American leaders like JFK, MLK, RFK, and Malcolm X were murdered during the 1960s. The U.S. participation in the so-called Vietnam War, which was in reality a civil war between the Vietnamese people, was predicated on that phony Gulf of Tonkin incident, which produced a resolution of the same name. This sin of empire was responsible for over 50,000 U.S. military deaths and perhaps millions of dead Vietnamese. It divided our nation just as divisively as we are now. Politically, by the 1970s, this two-party, one-party system saw the Republicans moving further to the right and the Democrats following their lead into the center-right. Bottom line, any sort of progressive movement was DOA, dead on arrival, as the two Bernie Sanders campaigns of 2016 and 2020 can attest. This in itself becomes one of the most heinous sins of empire during that time frame, only to be surpassed by 9/11 and its bastard child, a.k.a. the Iraq War. Anyone who still believes that Saddam Hussein had WMDs ready to use against us, there's a bridge in Brooklyn I have for sale. Thus, to paraphrase FDR, March 19, 2003 should be remembered as the second day of infamy, when we illegally and immorally bombed the hell out of Iraq before we invaded and occupied it. Yet today's America has idiots like Ellen DeGeneres treating a war criminal, George W. Bush, like some sweet old pal. How soon they forget. Sad. The most recent sin against the citizens of America is this Trump presidency. It is as if all the neo-fascists have come out of the woodwork and are now running things. It is not just the sin of white cops killing unarmed blacks. That is the tip of the iceberg. It is the mindset, this white supremacist way of seeing things that is so dangerous. Factor that with how this administration totally mishandled, on purpose maybe, the pandemic. If adults were in charge, we would have seen a gung-ho approach to the virus in December and January. Imagine if a real responsible government had begun to manufacture hundreds of millions of good quality face masks. Isn't that what the military is there for? Along with ventilators and hand sanitizers to send to our hospitals and caregivers. Imagine if, instead of once more bailing out big banks and large corporations, Uncle Sam sent the trillions of dollars to small businesses and to we citizens by way of a universal basic income, anywhere from $1,000 to $2,000 a month tax-free. This economy would be stimulated to the nth degree. Instead, we have the moron right-wing governors opening up their states to allow more of the virus into our bodies. As the late and great activist leader Walt DeYoung put it so eloquently, enough said. Thank you.
Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm the man with a thousand names.
I'm a man of wealth and fame. I've been around for long, long years.
There's a couple different places, I think. Anyway, maybe you're right. Anyhow, great song. All right, you confused me a little on what were you saying about Henry Wallace?
Okay, Henry Wallace was FDR's vice president, for one term, and when FDR was ill and knew he wasn't going to last for another election in 1944, Wallace was chosen by FDR wanted Wallace to succeed him. And at the convention, his own party all right, sabotaged that whole chance of him getting the nomination, and they pushed Harry Truman to get the nomination because he was the senator from Prendergast, which was the senator from Missouri that was in bed with the Prendergast machine, which was a corrupt political machine. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's what happened.
That's a little bit of history that I was sadly ignorant of. So thank you.
Yeah, Henry Wallace was. Henry Wallace wanted to make peace. He wanted to have friendship with the Soviets. He was doing that during the war, but he wanted to continue it after the war because he saw that after the war was over, that the Soviets are the ones who won the war. You know, which we weren't. You and I were not taught that in our school books.
Yeah, right.
We were growing up. Yeah.
What do you mean, DJ? Yeah.
What?
I know. We had a lot of people over there. A lot of people lose their lives, but you're right. From everything that I've been able to read, the Soviets really were the determining force.
25 million people, Chuck. They lost 25 million people.
Yeah.
I mean, 25, they were invaded. They were occupied. I mean, you know, we're lucky as a country, Chuck, that we've never been occupied.
Yeah.
You know, or invaded. I mean, we haven't been invaded or occupied. And
right.
We don't know what it's like.
Right.
You know,
I mean,
to have that happen to us. That's why
the only time we've had
insensitive.
A war on our own, on our own turf, was when we were fighting each other in the Civil War.
Right. But the point is that I think the reason, I think one of the reasons why there's so much American exceptionalism in our country's, you know, mindset and a lot of the citizenry, especially the right-wing ones, is because we never were invaded and occupied. So people don't have a history through their relatives of knowing what it's like to be occupied, you know, to be attacked, overwhelmed, beaten, and then occupied by a foreign power.
Huh.
So we never knew that. So.
Yeah.
But we are occupied anyway.
Well, the Native American segment of our population certainly knows what that's about.
Yeah. It's, you know, when you think about karma, you know, we people talk, I mean, I believe in karma. I mean, you know what karma is, right? There's people listening know karma is what you give out, you get back.
For them, just tell us.
Yeah, karma is what actions you make will come back to you. It's just the law of the universe. So, and if someone's victimized, sometimes the karma that they receive is to have the victimizer have to give to you, have to treat you. So, for instance, the Indians, the American Indians, they are the only ones who are allowed to own the gambling casinos.
Yeah.
See? So that was a karma. Then you have all the Mexicans, because the United States took over California, New Mexico, Arizona, Texas. That was all part of Mexico.
Right.
So what happened now, the karma of the United States is that the Mexicans are all coming back here. They've all been coming back here.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been coming back to those areas. You see, it's kind of a universal karma, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They're coming back to live here, and we have to deal with them, you know.
Yeah.
So that's another karma. Yeah, that's karma.
Yeah. I always think of karma as being very similar to the golden rule, you know. I mean, if you do unto others as you'd have them do unto you, well, you know, the karma, you know, whatever you do, it's going to come back to you. It's almost like a little force behind the golden rule.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what karma is. I mean, you know, it's funny because karma plays no favorites. It's just a law of the universe, you know.
Yep.
You want to say it's a law of God. If you're religious, you can say it's a law of God. But basically, I mean, look what's happening now with the police situation.
Yeah.
That's the karma. That's the karma of the police mentality. Remember we had that guy that I interviewed, T.P. Wilkinson, Dr. Wilkinson, about the history of the policing? Well,
yeah.
Well, people should listen to that on our website.
But he's a
historian, and what he explained was that in the United States the whole history of the police was started out really on the slave patrols in the South. They hired police to go and to find the runaway slaves.
Right, and before that, they were like the private guard for the aristocracy.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you look at the all the areas where we had the coal mines, for instance, the police were always there to protect the interests of the mine holders, not of the workers.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and it's a sad, but it's true. I mean, So what happened now in the U.S. with this Black Lives Matter or the unarmed blacks getting killed by police, that's the karma of the whole concept of the way police treat people of color. This has been going on since the slave patrols, you know, not just in the South, even up north. And look what happened. I mean, look at the karma. Now, the police actions of police that do terrible things, it's coming back now, see? So that's karma.
Yeah.
And let's look at the karma of what's happening in the Middle East with the United States.
Ah.
We illegally invaded Iraq, and we illegally went into Afghanistan too. I mean, that, you know, and we occupied the both countries. And what happened? The karma of doing those things caused a backlash of insurgency, you know. I mean, we were calling them, you know, terrorists. Then we changed it to call them insurgents. But the people who are on the other side of the issue, they call those people patriots.
Right.
Iraqi patriots. Or freedom fighters, right. So, yeah, and that's karma, too, that we went in somewhere where we shouldn't have went in. We did such horrible things, and you know, look at the karma. I mean, look at the karma of even the Japanese with the World War II.
Mm.
So the Japanese did horrible things, right? You know, the rape of Nanking, you know, not only Pearl Harbor, but the rape of Nanking, the way they treated you know, prisoners of war, very brutal. So what happens? They have the two bombs dropped. They get their empire is totally devastated, right?
Right.
And then the karma of us dropping the bombs on them, which were unnecessary. If we have time, we can get into that. But the karma that we had of doing that, dropping those bombs when they were not necessary, the Japanese survived after the war, and little by little they became one of the top economic powers of the 1960s and 70s.
Yeah.
Japan. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
We were all driving Japanese cars, you know.
Right.
So that's karma too, right? I mean, if you think about it.
Really? Really?
So it's real. I mean, karma is real. And
it is. I believe in it for sure. Yeah.
And we have not you and me, but our nation in our name has done so many heinous deeds, like I talked about in the piece, that our nation has a bad karma, and look what's happening to us.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
I shudder to think what's going to happen next, because I figure this is just the tip of the iceberg.
Well, I mean, you know, you and I live in Florida, so we have a governor. We have a governor who has absolutely no guts. He follows the bidding of his president, And he still has not mandated that everywhere in the state of Florida you have to wear a mask when you go out in public to a place. He won't do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are cities that are doing it. Where I live, not in my city, but I don't think they've done it here yet. And
really?
I sent a letter. I think I sent you a copy.
Yeah.
I sent you a copy of my letter, to the mayor and the council, really, lashing out at them for not doing it. Now, Daytona did it, and also New Smyrna Beach did it. But they said, listen to this, they mandated it, but they also said that they cannot do anything about it. They can't enforce it.
That sure does a lot of good, doesn't it?
Well, they're saying it up front that we can't enforce it. Now, to me, I was telling my brother today. Tell me what you think about this. Let's say it's mandated. If you can't go into a place of business without wearing a mask. All right. So now you have police officers, right? They're supposed to be working for us.
Mm-hmm.
So the police officer goes by a big public supermarket. He's outside. Somebody walks in without a mask. And he asked them, excuse me, do you have a mask? No. Can I have your ID, please? So the person has to give their ID. He takes a picture of it. You know how they can do that with their little thing. Takes a picture of the ID. He gives him back his ID and says, you'll be getting a summons in the, you'll be getting a fine in the mail. It'll be mailed to you, you know. And you'll have 30 days to pay it. That's what you do, see? You don't have to make a big deal. You don't have to arrest anybody. You just take their ID, give it back to them, and tell them, all right, you're going to have a fine. It will be mailed to you, and you'll have 30 days to pay it. Now it's all on the computer. It's on the computer, so,
Yeah.
It's like a parking ticket. It's like a ticket, right?
Yeah, certainly what they do with other things.
Isn't that a good idea, though?
Yeah.
Where you live, where you live in Fort Lauderdale, they're not going to have the beaches open, right? That's what I heard.
That's right. They have closed the sandy part of the beaches now. Yeah.
The sandy part of the beach.
Yeah. And they've, for this holiday weekend, they've closed the main parking lot down on the beach. So basically they're trying not to have anybody hanging out down there, but they want to let them drive by.
Drive by. Okay. All right. I mean, the problem with opening up the beaches is the public. You got too many morons out there that don't follow the rules.
If people would go out there and, stay far enough away from each other, it could be great. I mean, the sun on the beach is a very healing power that is incredible. But people don't do that. They all, cluster together. And so whatever somebody has is going to spread like wildfire.
Well, let's call a spade here for a second. The President of the United States and the Republican Party, if you look at all the videotapes, and you can hear these idiots in February and in March saying it's a hoax, it's just like a flu, it's not a bad cold, it's nothing, this is all blown up, and they kept saying that to the public over and over again. So it did become a political issue. If you supported Trump and the Republicans up until a couple of days ago, you wouldn't wear a mask, okay?
Right.
And that's what it was. And if you wore a mask, well, then you probably did not support the president.
Uh-huh.
And it became a political football, and it shouldn't have been.
Right. Okay? I mean, there should be nothing to do with politics. But so many things that should be nothing to do with politics aren't.
Yeah, but now Chuck, you got Hannity about a week or so ago. All of a sudden, this idiot on his show, for how long was he calling it a hoax and overblown? And then a week and a half ago, he's saying, everyone should wear a mask. You should wear a mask. You should social distance. And then Pence comes and puts the mask on, blah, blah, blah. And Rich McConnell says everyone should wear a mask. Now, all of a sudden, these idiots who were saying it was a hoax, it just shows you the hypocrisy of these people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, and what pisses me off is the ludicrousness of them saying, like a friend of mine told me recently, well, we were all wrong. You know, 90 days ago. I said, we were all wrong. I never said this was a hoax. I never said this was overblown.
Right.
You said it was overblown. You said it was a hoax. I never said that. What are you saying? We were all wrong.
Right.
In other words, the whole country was wrong. We didn't know.
But on the political stage, there were a lot of people, a lot of Democrats that said the same thing.
Well, there's a lot of people on the left who I'm friendly with who were coming out, and they still are, saying it's a hoax, and it's overblown. It's a means to control us. Yeah, look.
Yeah, yeah.
The virus is what it is. Okay.
Exactly.
And there are people.
Equally.
Right. But there are people who are in power, who have control, who are rich, and have other reasons. They took the advantage of this virus and they used it for their own means, and I know that. And but that doesn't—that's apples and oranges. That has nothing to do with something being very contagious, you know.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't understand. I don't understand why they can't separate that. Why can't people separate
the fact of
what it is to how it's being how it's being interpreted?
Yeah. Yeah.
They want to take away your civil liberties. Well. Yeah, maybe for other reasons they want to take away our civil liberties. I agree. But wearing a mask and social distancing and keeping your hands, you know, washing your hands and not, I don't think that has anything to do with our civil liberties.
Yeah.
It's a health crisis, Chuck.
It is.
It's a health crisis.
Right.
Yeah. You know,
during
World War II, when the Germans were doing the Blitzkrieg on England,
mm-hmm.
And at night they made sure that everything was, you know, blacked out, you know, all the, and what if people had the lights on in their living room and they were going out in the street and somebody would say, wait a second, what are you doing? Well, I have my own civil liberties. No.
Right.
This is a crisis. We're at war. We're under attack.
Yeah.
Okay. You can't put the lights on in your house at night. You can't do that. And I'm sorry.
Right.
Wear the damn mask.
Yeah.
All right, Chuck.
Thank
Good to
you,
talk to you Tom. Again.
Talk to you next
Take
time.
Care.
All
Take
right.
care.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human beings!
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right. You tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and Earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
Feel that things were not quite right, that everything was just ever so slightly askew?
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Mackie.
And we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here. All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Well, all right, everyone. Welcome back to the New American Dream Radio Show. And in this next half-hour segment, we have a really good talk from Azura Crispino. Azura joins us each month from Austin, Texas. And I'm going to play that conversation with her from earlier today. Right about now.
Hello, New American Dream listeners. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is Azura Crispino with Prison Abolition Prisoner Support, or PAPS. I wanted to give you some updates from our last show. So first, for those of you who are concerned about my husband, that's very sweet of you. The situation is that there's a little bit of a stall. He still has not been granted a judicial release hearing, but if you would like to help us with that, we are working with the Cuyahoga County Jail Coalition for a petition that would put pressure on judges in Cuyahoga County to grant judicial release hearings. So please join us in signing that petition. Chuck will be so kind as to provide you a link, or you can find it by following us on Twitter at iHeartPAP. The coalition in Cuyahoga County is also calling on judges to end moneyed bail. And in a related petition, the ACLU is asking for an end to moneyed monitoring. So right now, when people are being sent home instead of being in the jail because of COVID, they're being asked to wear an ankle monitor. But I just found out today that they have to pay $52 a week in order to be able to have their ankle monitor, which obviously is a problem. Getting a little broader from Cleveland, let's talk about the situation in Ohio and in Ohio prisons. Unfortunately, Ohio remains number one in the country with the number of COVID deaths. And it does not appear that ODRC is yet interested in making key changes to how the situation is being handled. I've been reporting to you about how there is a concern that if people test positive or request screening, that the conditions that they are facing will be seen as a punishment and that this will have a deterring effect to people getting tested. Unfortunately, we have had some stark confirmation of this from my friend Jermaine Scott. Now, for those of you who are unaware, Jermaine has been incarcerated in Ohio for quite some time, but recently the Georgetown Law students have been working on his case, and they've made a small documentary explaining why they believe that he couldn't possibly have committed the murder of which he was convicted. And there's been some reporting about people who are fighting for their innocence and are concerned with contracting COVID. There have been at least two people who have died from COVID in the process of fighting for their innocence, one in Pennsylvania and one in Ohio. So last week we heard from Jermaine that he was sick, and what happened was he called on a correctional officer to help him, telling her that he couldn't breathe. And at first she began making fun of him for using, you know, the same words that Eric Garner and George Floyd use, saying, "Oh, you're one of them. I can't breathe." And he just reiterated to her, "I can't breathe." And at that point she began to continue making fun of him, saying, "Oh, you're just having a drug episode." And he told her, "Lady, I haven't touched drugs in 24 years. At that point, he was able to get medical attention, and it turned out that he had 102 degree fever, and he was tested for COVID-19 at Mansfield Correctional. Now, while he was awaiting his test results, he was being kept in the medical area. And although we were concerned about the limited treatment that he was receiving, all he was given was aspirin, he was nevertheless somewhat comfortable, even though he was obviously gasping for air as I was talking to him. And we were concerned about the fact that his oxygen levels were not being monitored, nor had he been given any oxygen. Now, here's where the story gets even worse. Once he received his results that he was positive for COVID-19, at that point, he was taken to the quarantine block. The quarantine block at Mansfield Correctional is the former death row block, which had been decommissioned now that death row is no longer kept at Mansfield. Because it had been decommissioned, it's not currently wired for electricity. That's right. They have one working outlet that is being used by 20 men. So they have plugged in a power strip so that there are four outlets working out of that one outlet. However, these guys have no air conditioning, can't run the fan because there's no power, have no access to their JPEG kiosks, which is how they're able to contact the outside world, and perhaps more importantly, file grievances regarding their conditions, because Ohio Department of Corrections has now decided that there is no more sending what are called kites or paper requests for grievances. Now, one of the things that's really funny about this is that Annette Chambers-Smith, who heads the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections, is the former vice president of JPEG, and she has conveniently decided that JPEG kiosks, which are contracted out, and you know there's a payment to JPEG for this, should now be used for grievances. So Jermaine can't access the JPEG kiosk because the block that he's in doesn't have one and doesn't really have any access to power. Therefore, he can't file a grievance over his conditions, assuming, of course, that he were strong enough to do so while he's fighting COVID-19 without air conditioning, without a fan. But don't worry, he's been given an ice pack, which ODRC tells us is enough for him to be able to effectively fight off this virus. Is there any question as to why ODRC is number one in prison deaths in the United States and therefore the world due to COVID-19? So Jermaine has been staying strong and doing as much reporting as he can on this issue. Obviously, he would welcome your letters, but in the meantime, this raises a lot of questions that we have been asking since the beginning of this pandemic, namely, when are prisons going to realize that this is a public health crisis and that they need to handle it like a public health crisis? And not two, why on earth are they punishing people for testing positive for COVID-19 instead of making sure that these public health crises are being dealt with as a public health crisis. And of course, we know that the answers to these questions are because prisons are for profit. But in the meantime, we need to figure out a way to help these folks. Obviously, this isn't an issue that's just going on in Ohio, but because that's where my husband is, that's where I've been focused. But we're hearing some really disturbing reports, for example, at Trumbull Unit in Ohio. A man had his cellie test positive for COVID and is currently, the cellie is currently in ICU, but the gentleman in question a week later has yet to be tested for COVID. Just to kind of give a bit of a broader scope, in Texas, one of the major prison issues has been people who have been granted parole but have to finish a class in order to be able to be paroled. And yet the classes are unavailable because of COVID. Now, I'm teaching online. Many of you are taking classes online or teaching them online. The idea that we would just have the classes online seems like it's the obvious solution. Or if people are awaiting classes in order to be released, why not release them and then allow them to take the classes online from home? Yet instead, Texas has decided that, no, we're just going to wait to grant these people parole until, I don't know, they die of COVID because we just can't make this programming available.
Wow. You know, for years, in Florida at least, and I'm pretty sure in everywhere in the country, they've had court proceedings that are done by television or whatever. You would think that they could do a class that way.
Yeah, I mean, and also just that they could have court proceedings by teleconference. You know, in terms of the judicial release hearings that we're talking about, in my husband's case, he specifically, it's the very first line of his judicial release motion. You know, our legal team states that based on the fact that we are in the middle of this pandemic, can you please grant his hearing by teleconference? So considering the idea that, you know, doing things by television is or by teleconference or whatever, however you want to put it, is the new normal, you're absolutely right. Why can't the prison figure out a way to have this programming? But the problem is that they don't actually want to offer the programming. What they want to do is just keep people in there for as long as possible. I think especially during the pandemic, there's a bit of a concern about, oh, we have to keep our numbers up in order to maximize our profits, when what they should be thinking about is how can we get as many people as humanly possible out of here so that we can increase the distance between individuals in order to be able to have social distancing. But unfortunately, that's not what's happening.
It's, I tell you, the system is really rigged. But, you know, as far as the court proceedings, I mean, I know they do it here for intake. Maybe it's only certain types of things that they allow to do that way, but certainly they could extend that to, you know, just about any court proceeding in the current situation.
Well, assuming, of course, that the defendant agrees to it, right? There is something to be said, for example, depending on the court proceeding, the attorney may want to be able to whisper in their client's ear and not have that be in a teleconference situation, right? But there are definitely instances, like my husband, where the defendant has requested that the hearing be held by teleconference. So in terms of judicial release, that's a process that is sort of unique to Ohio, because they really they still have a parole board, but parole is substantially limited in Ohio compared to other states. So judicial release is basically a process by which the defendant returns to the judge that sentenced them, and the judge does what might be considered a sentence modification in any other state. It's, for legal purposes, what I said is inaccurate, but for our purposes, That's the way to think about it. But that means that the defendant needs to go back in front of the judge in order for this to occur, right? And the judge can speak to the defendant in order to establish additional parameters, like you're going to have to check in or whatever it is that the judge wants to do. In Ohio, they have wide latitude in terms of what they want to do or how they want to grant a judicial release motion. And what's interesting, once again, specific to Ohio, is that the Supreme Court gave $6 million for various county courts to be granted video conferencing equipment so that they can have video conferencing with defendants if they wish to, right?
Mm-hmm.
So certainly I'm not arguing that a defendant who wants to have trial in court should be forced into having it happen by video conferencing.
Right,
but
sure.
For those that have requested it, one of the questions becomes, why isn't this getting processed faster, right? And on a personal level, you know, I don't want to say anything that remotely sounds like I'm criticizing the judge in my husband's case, you know, because
Understood.
The judicial release motion is at the judge's discretion, and basically, you know, my husband's life is in her hands. At the same time, do I think that the courts in general and the parole boards in general in Ohio and in the United States could be doing more to aggressively release people from prison? Absolutely. And I think that as the country has been, and the world has been transfixed by everything that's been going on in terms of the protests for police accountability or to defund the police or abolish the police, and against police brutality, I think the piece that we need to remember is that policing racism does not end with someone dying in the street. And as tragic as that is, and as awful as that is, we at least see it. What we don't often see are the number of people who are languishing behind bars and dying because of COVID that are also there due to police misconduct or over-policing or racist policing, right? So when we look at a case like Jermaine Scott, where, you know, was he kind of a thug character at the time? Okay, maybe, you know, he does admit to having used a credit card that belonged to the murder victim. But that was really the only evidence that tied him to the crime of murder, even though it's really very obvious that he couldn't have committed the crime in question. But it was easy for police in his particular case to just be like, well, we have one young black man who there's a little bit of evidence that he committed this crime. Let's just go ahead and find him guilty. And then here we are. He's been in prison about as long as I've been alive. And now he's tested positive for COVID, and he's being held on the former death row for a crime that he didn't commit. Now, please understand, I don't like to focus on innocence, because even if we got rid of every single innocent person in prison, and we should, that still wouldn't deal with the problem of mass incarceration and enslavement in this country.
Right.
But the point that I'm trying to make here is that this is a multi-headed hydra. When we talk about police brutality and police misconduct and police racism, we need to understand that that also feeds into the problem of mass incarceration and the prison industrial complex, because people become arrested by those same police. And then the correctional staff, you know, we complain about police having insufficient training and insufficient sensitivity training and undoing bias training. It's substantially worse for correctional officers, right? Their minimum requirements to become a CO and the amount of training and professional development that they receive. I mean, if you think that cops are undereducated, then COs are definitely undereducated, right? So all of these issues are interconnected and interrelated. And, you know, there's legitimate reason for people to be setting police stations on fire, which a little bit of a tidbit there. I recently found out that the approval rating for Minneapolis having set the police station on fire is higher than either the approval rating for Donald Trump or the approval rating for Joe Biden. So that's something really interesting about where we are in the United States, that 54% of people to some extent agree with having set that police station on fire, and neither of those two men are at that agreement. So, listeners, I know that I'm not staying as focused as I normally would be during our presentations today, but this really is a time where nothing is normal. And yes, that's lamentable for some of us, but for many of us, we're looking at it as an opportunity, because the truth of the matter is that our old normal was awful. Our old normal was comfortable and benefited some of us, but for many of us, it meant prison industrial complex, enslavement, and death at the hands of the police. And we have an opportunity to create a new normal that includes bail reform, that includes mass decarceration and possibly prison abolition and police abolition. Because what this virus has done is to make us realize that our systems that were in place weren't working. But the fact that they weren't working wasn't as obvious to many of us. So one of the things that I'm fond of saying is that the virus doesn't discriminate between prisoners and correctional staff. The virus doesn't discriminate between Black, white, Hispanic. The virus just sees us all as people. And one of the reasons why we need to be concerned about mass incarceration is because consistently and overwhelmingly what we're seeing is that counties that have prisons have the highest rates of COVID-19 transmission. Not just within the prison, even if you were to take the prison out of the county, which some counties have done in terms of their accounting, by the way, it is still the case that what happens is a correctional officer goes in, a whole bunch of prisoners become COVID positive, and then the virus spreads to the rest of the correctional staff, who then return to the rest of their community and spread the virus.
Yeah.
So as we're trying to combat a global pandemic, and the United States at this point is substantially in the lead in terms of COVID transmission rates and COVID death, part of what that is showing us is that we don't just have a COVID problem, we have a mass incarceration problem that is feeding into the COVID problem. We have a racism problem that is feeding into the COVID problem. We have an over-policing problem that is feeding into the COVID problem. And one of the things that's really fascinating about this particular virus is that it is really causing us to be able to connect all the dots in ways that maybe we had yet to be connecting them, because the virus doesn't distinguish these things that we distinguish. It just sees all human beings as one viable host. And I find it fascinating that this deadly virus is able to see a truth that many of us struggle with on a spiritual and intellectual level, namely to see all of humanity as one.
Hear, hear. Yeah. I mean, that one is worth saying again. You know, this virus sees us all as one. Why don't we?
Well, we need to be, right? We need to see in people who are incarcerated with brothers and sisters, because they are, or at the very least, even if that's not something that you yet see in terms of your own spiritual journey, even if you're just concerned with your immediate safety and well-being and your family's immediate safety and well-being, it is the case that when you have 2,000 people that are stuck 24/7 in a building the size of your high school, that means that the virus is going to spread like wildfire through them. And then eventually all of the correctional staff, or just all the staff that are working in that prison, are going to become infected. And that virus is going to return to you.
Yeah. Makes sense. Well, Azura, thank you very much for this. I always look forward to hearing from you, and I look forward to doing it again next month.
Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks again to Azura Crispino, who joins us in this first week of each month, and occasionally a few other times. Recently, we put a show up in the archives at newdream.us. It was the April 30th prison show, and Azura was part of that show, along with Patero Sabuni, Frank Cordero, and Anthony Raisin. And I urge you to check out newdream.us, our website, where we do have the archives. I'm a couple months behind in posting them, but I'm getting there. I'm going to get there soon, I promise. And this last one, I think it's the most recent show that is currently on the archives, and it was just a tremendous show with those four in kind of a panel discussion. Each one of them stayed with me for the entire show, and it's a little bit different concept that I'm kind of working on as we go along. Listeners, thank you so much for joining me right here on the New American Dream Radio Show. And let me remind you that Revolution Radio is a listener-supported network. And, hey, this is the beginning of a month, the second day of a month. So, yeah, they're working toward their new goal. Why don't you help them get there? It's a bunch of great people. They keep two streams of radio shows going just about 24/7. And it's a lot of work, and they are doing that. So just keep on supporting them and keep on listening to us. That's what I've got to say. All right, then. So, all right, we are coming up on the station break, and in our final segment, we're going to be hearing from Karen Katowski. Karen was in the Pentagon on 9/11, and she has run for up in Virginia. Hey, stay tuned.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Who owns you? If you're not in control, then someone else is. Join me, Ivy West, for Voices on the Wind, Saturday. I discuss government, health, metaphysics, suppressed science, universal mysteries, little-known incredible facts, alternative energies, and even more than you can imagine.
There is blood on the wire.
Won't you join us on Revolution Radio Saturdays for Voices on the Wind with me, Ivy West.
There are lives in the balance, people under fire.
Because if your head's in the sand, your tail is a target.
travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and Earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partner are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given rights, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to the New American Dream Radio Show. And wow, can you believe it? Here we are, the final segment already. And it's going to be another good one. We're going to bring on Karen Katowski, and Karen is an excellent guest. She joins me on the first Thursday of every month, and we're calling Karen right now in Virginia. So we'll see what, well, hello. Hi, Karen. Welcome to the new team.
Yeah, I just got off of a Zoom call, and I just hit the leave button right when the phone rang. So I haven't had any time to prepare anything.
Well, how's that for timing?
Yeah. Yeah, good timing, good timing. Yeah, so I'm not even up on, like, the news. What is the news? I mean, what is the truth? You know, we want to know what the truth is. It's really hard to find out the truth from the news. You know, we have all these people out of work. We have all these economic restrictions, sick people, not as many sick people as you'd think, but, you know, we're very concerned about the COVID and the news. And then the stock market's going nuts, and the jobs report comes out, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, yeah, everybody's hiring. It's like, what world are people living in? I don't know. It's really hard to relate to. It's almost like watching a cartoon of someone's imagination. That's the news. What's really happening? What is the truth? Again, this age-old question. And really, I think it comes down to, individuals, people, families, the very small, low-level, can you have solid, can you have truth shared by 1 million people? Can you have a truth that's shared by 1 million people? I mean, we think about churches, and you have folks that take priests, Catholic priests, Catholic, big church, been around for a long, long time. And yet, come to find out, if you study anything about anything, you'll find out, well, all those priests and all the people up the chain and down the chain have a zillion questions about their faith. There really isn't at that large number of people a clear shared truth. If you want truth, it's from your heart, inside. What is true to you? What do you believe? What are you about? What do you value? Once you start adding people to the mix, and just think about the second person you add to the mix. Let's talk about traditional marriage, or not really traditional marriage, but marriage of two people as opposed to polyandry or polygamy or anything like that. We have multiple, because that really has got to be complicated. But let's just think a marriage or a relationship, long-term relationship between two individual people. And anybody who's ever been in a relationship like that, which is a lot of people, is it easy? do you agree on every little thing? Of course not. It's very complicated to find a shared truth, even amongst two individuals. So finding that shared truth in this larger group, a community, a state, an empire like the United States, a government, there's no shared truth. We can't find a little truth that we agree on. And the reason I'm onto this subject is because with Zoom, I was just off a Zoom meeting with a group of political people all arguing for two solid hours. Of course, they all have a shared truth, right? Because they're all part of the same political party. They can't stand each other. We hate each other. We despise each other. We have contempt for each other, and we don't agree on anything. And yet, we're all part of the same party.
What happens when people are on the opposite party?
So I was on a Zoom call with my family. There to do it. My two brothers, one of the whacked out leftists, and the other one is a Trumpster, a hardcore Trump supporter. And but the Trump supporter was sick, so he didn't participate. And the whacked out left wing family, which are, they're all highly afflicted with Trump derangement syndrome, are on there. And we're on this Zoom video with my poor beleaguered mother, who does not cuss and she never says a bad word. She loves everybody. She's just the sweetest lady you can imagine, like everybody's mother, right? But she's there in the Zoom meeting when my brother and I basically get into this huge escalating argument that ends up with a good amount of foul language. His two daughters were there. They're in their 20s. They were laughing their heads off because they have heard bad words before. My poor mother was appalled because she's heard them too, but she doesn't like to hear them. And anyway, I've been thinking about why I lost my temper. And of course, I'm sure he lost his temper too. But I think I have to say I'm the older sister, so I probably started it. Have some responsibility. But what were we fighting about? Well, we're fighting about, nobody really knows, like all fights, right? What is it, think about your wars. What was it about? World War I, nobody knows. World War II, well, not 100% sure there was this, there was that. But even in individual arguments, it's often hard to figure out why this started. And so I've been thinking about it for a couple of days because I do feel bad for using the foul language in front of my mother and yelling at my brother. And really, it's about, I think, frustration on both sides, his side and my side, with we do not have a shared truth. We have no shared concept of anything that we are looking at. So he looks at, let's say, mainstream media. And he's a pretty good mainstream media guy, although he also is anti-corporate capitalism, and I agree with that. And he's anti-war, he says, but so he's anti-war and I'm anti-war, but then we think about, well, how do you be anti-war? And that's when we start to, our shared truth starts to break down, because I see war and state prosecution of war as a result of concentrated power in human hands, power, of course, and money, and corporate capitalism, and all that stuff. And there's interests that states have, and a lot of that interest really, it's power, but a lot of it's also profit. There's a lot of profit. I mean, empires around the world, it was for gold and for God, they said, but God was quite secondary in what the empires were doing in the 16 and 1700s. It was really for gold and silver. It was about, and land, and power and all this stuff. So that's states want, and the, they can get more of it when their power is concentrated. They can get more of it when the people are compliant in their nations, the subordinate people who provide the taxes or the barrels of, you know, the bushels of corn, whatever it is that, that all the working people, all the productive people in any society provide to make that state, you know, give that state some resources that it goes and does stuff with, like expand, make war, you know, add to its power, surveil its citizens, shut down the economy for COVID, whatever it is, right? So now I'm revealing my, my bias. So I am a decentralist. I am a person who, I don't like totalitarianism in any of its forms, and I don't even like the shadow of totalitarianism. And I think that's where war comes from. I think that's where misery comes from. I think that's where poverty comes from. Now, he, my brother, my left-wing brother, very much we share a lot of the same concepts. But he feels that a strong government can do good things if we could just get it to do good things. A strong government would shut the economy down to save lives in the face of a pandemic. A strong government should have the capability to do that. A strong government should have the capability to surveil all of its citizens and control databases, develop and maintain databases on people so that it could keep them safe. And so for me, it's like, well, wait a minute. You mean totalitarianism can be good? If it's used the right way, and I'm like, oh my God. And anyway, that's not enough to cause me to cuss at him. But the smug attitude and the suggestions that I'm just a hick from the sticks, and that's why I don't get it. I don't get why government should be so strong and powerful. It'll just do good things. If we just had the right people, if we could just put, now he's a Bernie guy, so he doesn't like Biden, thank God. But he hates Trump, has Trump derangement syndrome, doesn't really like Biden, will vote Democratic, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. But he wanted Bernie. He wanted the 78-year-old communist. So they said, well, if that guy was in charge of the totalitarian government, all these good things would happen. Because, you know, everybody knows Bernie wouldn't start a war. And it's like, come on, do you not even understand how our government works? That's what I'm thinking, you know. Like I'm going to know it all now. I'm the smug one. Because I think he doesn't understand how government works. But anyway, bottom line is, so to stop fighting in your groups and your organizations and your families. I don't know how to do it, but I do think that we really maybe expect too much of everyone else. When we expect them to share our truth and to embrace it. And when they expect us to see the obvious, quote unquote, you know, because it's what's very obvious to some people, to one person, is not very obvious to another person.
Yeah. I think instead of trying, expecting everybody to share our truth, we need to find ways to share their truth.
Interesting way to put it. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so I think we have to kind of understand and try to look through, well, you know, the old Indian proverb, what is it? Acquiring someone's culture. What do they call that?
Yeah,
I'm probably doing it, but whatever.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So, but you know, the walk a mile in a guy's shoes or his moccasins. When I was a kid, they always said, you got to walk a mile in the moccasins. I don't know why they said moccasins. And it, because you've heard it the same way with regular shoes or whatever, but
yeah.
The idea of trying to experience, a little bit, not, you don't have to walk 10,000 miles in their moccasins. You don't have to walk 100 miles. It just says walk a mile,
mm-hmm.
which is really short.
Yeah.
Distance, quite briefly. So, you know, we need to probably try to do that. And, you know, you can't tell other people to do that. You cannot tell, and this is where I do get a little angry. You can't tell activists, particularly left-wing activists, and far right wing possibly too, the same. But you can't really tell them to walk a mile in your shoes. They're not going to do that because you don't have legitimacy to even have shoes. So I think before you can walk a mile in anybody's shoes, you also have to step back and say your path is legitimate for you. I'm not the judge of your path.
Mm-hmm.
If you can say that, then you can say, oh, and I'm interested in maybe looking through your eyes to see what it looks like to you. I think obviously a big part of the Black Lives Matter is exactly that, which is to put ourselves in the position of people of color in a lot of places and imagine what life is like for them. That's very important. I mean, we need a lot of, you know, we need police reform. We need these guys to carry privately funded insurance. We need to get the bad apples gone. You know, there's all kinds of systemic changes that are needed. And in fact, I think Rand Paul has some ideas. There's a couple other congressmen up there had ideas. And guess what? The best ideas are being shut down by both parties, which ought to
tell you something. How about that? That happens all the time.
It happens all the time. That's right. That's right. And again, you know, government has power, and its primary aim is to maintain its power, and the secondary aim is to grow its power. So if you think it's there for you, you might be third. You're probably 30th on the list. That's right. But, you know, the people that hate Trump so bad, and look, I am a Southerner. Well, my husband says I'm not Southern enough, but I brought up North Carolina. I live in Virginia. I'm kind of Southern. And, you know, I'll tell you this. I was brought up to not like Yankees. Okay, I'll just say that right up straight up, you know. And Yankees to me are New Englanders and New Yorkers. And what is Trump? He is a New Yorker. And he's the epitome of a New Yorker. And he has a lot of those stereotypical mannerisms and attitudes, and his language style and everything else about him is what a great many people associate with a Yankee, a damn Yankee, and they don't really like him. Now, that's from my perspective, you know, I like Trump just fine, but I'm not comfortable with his Yankeeness. That I don't like. But I'm willing to say. But look, he wasn't born in the South, and he wasn't raised in the mountains in North Carolina, and I wasn't born in New York, so I don't really know. And yeah, I guess I can have some prejudice, but I really shouldn't put too much weight on that. But there are the people that cannot stand him, the Trump derangement syndrome, they call it, is a large category of people that hate Trump. There's so many reasons you could hate any president. I've certainly hated a few in the past, and Trump definitely makes me angry. But you know, they don't, that with Trump in particular, I don't even think they analyze how much of what they hate about him is the fact that he's a damn Yankee, and they don't really want to identify with that part of themselves, you know, the fact that he's an other, because so many of us are New Yorkers. We're not all New Yorkers, and most people who are not New Yorkers don't get New Yorkers, okay? There is a cultural gap there, which the New Yorkers are very happy with, because they look down on the rest of us, too. I mean, that's okay. That's just the way it is, but I don't think so many people just Trump derangement syndrome. They say, oh, I hate Trump because I love the country, or I hate Trump because he's this or that. And I wonder if they would dissect that down and find out, well, they really just hate Trump because you know what? They don't like his mannerisms, or they don't like who they think he is. And you know, it's so funny how much the evangelical crowd, not all of them, of course, there's a number that don't, but you know, he has a lot of support from what they call the Christian right, you know, the Jerry Falwell movement that brought Reagan into power. And Trump has tapped into that to some extent. And I don't like that. You know, I'm a little bit wary of any kind of, you know, I believe politicians are pretty evil, all of them. So you get this religious blessing on Trump from the Protestant right and some of the Catholics, mostly the Protestant South loves him. And you have to really, you know, I don't get that, but there's a lesson there. There's a lesson there. And that lesson is probably not, the people doing it are not aware of the lesson. But someone like me or other people who could look from the outside, I look at that and I say, well, you know what? This is kind of a forgiveness thing here. Sure, he's been divorced twice. He's had a few affairs in between, possibly had affairs when he was married. I mean, all these things, right? He's all that you could heck pick a story. And these are sinful characteristics, sinful behaviors. Probably a lot of them are true. And yet the Christian right has been able to accommodate him. Now, the negative view could say, well, they're just a bunch of hypocrites. Yeah, sure, they probably are. They might be. I don't know. But there is something to be said for allowing a person who is not you, whether that's your partner or the president, to be who they are, and to not really, you know, make these broad brush judgments because of, you know, things that you think they did that aren't right. I mean, if we behave that way to our friends, we won't have any friends. If we behave that way to our spouses, we would be single. We would be permanently single. We would be always heartbroken.
Or we kill ourselves or something. I mean, yeah.
That's right. And also, you know, the same left-wing woke community in this country, and this is all ages, not just any particular generation, it seems like they're all about loving yourself and making sure you're healthy emotionally. That's where they should start, and that's probably where they should finish. To just take care of them. Because all this hate and demands and intolerance for how other people are, judgment on they did this and they did that. It's not helpful. And I think the pursuit of a common truth that goes beyond one person is a nice idea. It's kind of like a little dream. It may happen every once in a while for a short period of time. But if you think that's going to happen, you are going to be disappointed. Everybody sees things their own way. They've walked a different path to get there. And we might want to learn from them, want to embrace them. We might want to give them their space, you know. And we might even want to talk about them sometimes.
And hopefully we can find a few things that we actually agree on and enjoy that.
That's right. Well, I'll tell you, people, they say there was some survey just, I guess, this past week, and they say Americans are not very happy. Obviously, not a big surprise. but you know, your happiness, I know that they always tell you, who's responsible for your happiness? Well, actually, it's you. You're responsible for your happiness. So if you're not happy, focus on yourself a little bit more. And I really see these people knocking over statues. I see these videos of people screaming at other people. And I did it myself. I did it myself on a Zoom family video. You know, I guess it was a Zoom. It was FaceTime. I was screaming at my brother. Just lost my temper. And really, you know, that wasn't good. That wasn't productive. It didn't really change anything. It didn't change anything. So maybe we can just find a truth that we like, that is proven, that we can test. Is this real? Is this real? And, of course, mainstream media is not a place to go for that. And work on our own happiness. And then little by little, see if we can find some shared truths locally amongst people that we physically know and are physically around. And finally, let's spend some energy on the politicians. But they should be 100 on our list. You know, I got 99 problems, and Trump ain't one of them. That's how it should be. But it's not. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not that way. I think part of our angst as a nation is because we have forgotten what life is really supposed to be about and what humanity looks like. Humanity is not a mass of people. It's individuals.
We have forgotten what is important.
I think that's so. Maybe, and I know I did. I know I did. Like I said, I felt bad as well. I've been thinking about what I.
I think we all do on a daily basis, but hopefully we get past that and remember after a little while.
I'm hoping so because. You know, regardless of all the possible futures that people have, that this country has, that the world has, it goes step by step, minute by minute, day by day. And we need to be in that moment. And we need to kind of work on ourselves a little bit so that we'll be better to handle all the things. And you know, that could be a way to be happy. It's certainly
very much.
Not going to find quality. Yeah. But anyway, those are some things on my mind.
what you were saying about your family, you know, the bottom line is, in spite of whatever, you know, fight you had, I bet you still love them.
Oh, sure, yeah. And,
of course.
You've
got to remember that.
Yes, that's right. And, you know, too, part of, I think, what we call love, is that we assume that we understand everything about them And then when it doesn't, when they don't behave a certain way or don't produce the result that we want, we go, oh my God, we're actually more angry. You know, they say if you treat your neighbors or your acquaintances or your guests in your house like you treated your kids, you wouldn't have any neighbors or guests in your house. Because the way we often treat our kids, you know, is critical and harsh. And why is that? It's because we love them so much and we care about them so much that when they're not, you know, doing what we think they're supposed to be doing, it is really, you know, it's a betrayal. It's a big thing we have to deal with, as opposed to if it was a guest in your house and they put their tea down on, you know, did something wrong that wasn't your habit or did something that broke something. You wouldn't like lose your mind over it. If your kid did it, you probably would. But if a guest did it, you'd say, oh, it's okay. I'll clean it up. Don't even worry about that. Don't give it another thought. That's how we treat it. But we ought to treat more people like guests instead of like family, because we often treat our family pretty badly. And it's because we assume that we all share the same truth, and we don't. We shouldn't make these assumptions. Because I honestly think I assume that since we're all raised in the same household and we you know, we agree on corporate capitalism, we agree on anti-war. So I'm assuming we agree on everything. And I'm assuming that if I know it, it must be true. And why can't my brother see that? And it's like, oh my God, I'm getting pretty, I'm thinking he's being arrogant, but yet he's being arrogant. We're all being arrogant and we don't want to do that. So, but yeah, it's a journey.
Sometimes you need an experience like that to kind of remind you of how things really are.
Yeah. I think that's true. And what's important.
Exactly. You know, what's important.
We know every year that we have an election, a presidential election, it's always, and they'll tell you this, and I'm sure we've already heard it, this is the most important election ever. And yet every time after we elect somebody, nothing changes. At some point when you're like 50 or 60 years old and you've seen this like, you know, 20 times, wait.
And you say, okay, maybe it's not that important.
Might not be that important. And maybe that's the shared truth that we want to talk about. But of course, you got to be careful if you say the election is not important, because there are a lot of people out there think they are very important.
Yeah, you could get in a lot of trouble that way.
It is
always great fun to visit with you, Karen. Thank you so much for sharing this on the show. It's really been a lot of fun. And we're about wrapped up now. But I look forward to visiting again next month.
Okay, me too. I'll talk to you next month.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right. And listeners, thank you. You're the most important. Really.
Thank you for listening to Revolution.